Welcome to episode 15 of the Beyond the Self podcast. I am your host, Africa, and as always, I am very, very, very grateful to be back with you today. We missed an episode last week, and I feel good about that. I feel very okay about that because I had a pretty surreal week last week. And the reason why it was a little bit surreal is because my conversation with Jordan and Michaela Peterson, go onto YouTube, run to YouTube if you haven't listened to it yet, or to wherever you get your podcast from. Our interview, which we did in September, I believe. I think we did it. Yeah, we did it in September. Our interview came out and I hadn't really been thinking much about its release simply because I have a lot of conversations with different people. I'm always guesting on someone's podcast, so something is always coming out. And I didn't know when exactly this conversation was going to come out. And I didn't put too much weight on it either. So the day that it was published, I didn't know that it was happening. But the reception that I received instantly and have been receiving every single day since has just blown my entire fucking mind. So last week, I just needed to relish in that. I just needed to sit in that because the nature of the work that I do just generally and have been doing for the past 4 years especially is that I experience a lot of really big moments, a lot of surreal moments, if you will, and a lot of moments that remind me of just how much I've put into this, right? And I know that can sound quite vague, but it's what's coming. I'm just reminded of how consistent I have been. And when I talk about being consistent, I'm not necessarily talking about showing up and being visible, blah, blah, blah. That's a part of it. But for me, I'm talking about being energetically consistent and being very committed to just exploring human behavior, to just exploring my own behavior, to really understanding why we do the things we do, to understand the concept of self-sabotage, but looking at it through the lens of self-protection. I've just always been so committed to these things. And when I get to have conversations with people, sometimes I have to really pinch myself because it's very much real, but it can easily just feel quite surreal. Anyway, that might have made sense, but it might have not, but it's fine because it makes sense to me. Anyway, this conversation with Jordan Peterson mainly, I would say it was Michaela was there and she's absolutely fantastic, but it felt more like a conversation between me and Jordan. And it's something that really had to happen because it's not often that you get the chance to sit with someone, especially someone who is in the public eye at that level. You get a chance to sit with them and to tell them how you've experienced them. And the thing is, you're not telling them how you've experienced them in a way that is entirely positive to begin with. You're being very honest about buying into their really, really public and aggressive misrepresentation campaign. And I know that he is someone that a lot of people simply won't listen to just because someone else has told them that he's this, he's that, he's the other, right? To the point where some people won't even engage with his work. They won't even entertain the idea of listening to a Jordan Peterson lecture because of the image they have of him, because they've fully decided that this is who this person is. You might have heard the door in the background, by the way. I'll try and edit that out. And, you know, I used to be one of those people. And I often find myself just thanking myself for allowing me to be able to open up to someone like him. And I won't go on too much about it, because I think everyone has their own time. Some people will choose to not be open to other people, and that's completely fine. But I think it's important to just be a little bit curious about why and to just make sure that it's coming from a fully informed place, instead of just positioning it as some kind of boundary when that's actually it's not really any boundary at all. Anyway, so the feedback and reception that I've been getting from people for the past 2 weeks now has just been fucking mind-blowing. It really has. I am so grateful. I'm so grateful. If you're even listening to this episode because you found me through that conversation, welcome. And just thank you so, so much for your support. And for all of you that have been with me for such a long time, whether that long time is months or years, and have also just given me the most support and encouragement and validation and affirming my voice and the work that I do. Thank you so fucking much. It really is just the beginning. It really is just the beginning. And when I say that, I really do mean it. I really do mean it. I feel like I'm just getting started in so many ways, so many ways. And most of those ways, it has nothing to do with my public profile or the reputation that I have or anything that, you know, anything that is worldly. For me, it's very much an internal process. I feel like I'm stepping into a completely new season of myself, which is why I wanted to have this conversation with you today, actually, because as we think about identity for me, and as I talk about identity and I work with people around identity, I feel like it's really important for me to also share what is happening within me, not kind of just teaching and giving intellectual property, but for you to actually have an understanding of what is happening within me on an identity level. And yeah, the more that I just continue doing what I do in the world, the more that I just stand in my own integrity, the more that I stand in my values and who I really want to be, not who the world might want me to be, not who, you know, the people from my past might want me to be, but who the fuck I want to be right now. I stand really firm in that, but I stay flexible to the world. I'm very open to having my worldview challenged. I don't think I'm better than anyone else. I don't think I'm worse than anyone else. I think I just am. And, you know, my emotional state will change depending on what's happening outside of me and also inside of me. And I accept all of those things. But I stand very, very firm in who I am. And I'm really starting to see the results of that. And I always end up thinking of my sobriety journey, actually. And in almost every single interview that I do and have been doing for years, it always ends up coming up because it's such, oh my goodness. If I hadn't got sober, first of all, I don't think you'd be fucking listening to this episode because it probably would not exist. But if I hadn't got sober, I mean, in the exact way that I did, I mean, what can I even say? I wouldn't be the person that I am as I sit in this chair right now. But I just have my sobriety to thank for so, so, so much. And I actually have a letter that I want to share with you, which I wrote in 2017 when I was 3 months sober. And so this is nearly, yeah, this letter was written nearly 5 years ago. And in a week, I'm going to be 5 years sober. Well, on the 7th of November. Yeah, in a week or so. I'm going to be 5 years sober. And I was doing a little bit of decluttering the other day. I think it was a few weeks ago. Let's pour a little bit of tea for this one. I was doing a little bit of decluttering the other day, just cleaning out a few things, looking at old documents, looking at what I've kept. Do I need this? Do I not need this? Oh, I didn't even know I had this. And then I came across, I'm getting chills even as I talk about it and look at it here right next to me. I came across the letter that I wrote when I was 3 months sober. And see, I'm no stranger to an open letter. I have written two very important ones in my adult life. So I came across this letter that was very neatly folded, looks like it has just been printed out. And it was between some of my paperwork and some of my old journals. And I don't even remember printing out this letter. I don't remember folding it. I don't remember having it. But it was a letter that I wrote when I was coming out, if you will. I was revealing that alcohol has become a very big problem for me, and that I'm making a commitment to change, and that I am removing the shame from myself by being open about this. And I was writing this for my friends. I was writing this for my family. I was writing this for people I had encountered. I was writing this to free myself as well. Does that sound familiar? Sounds a little bit like the open letter that I wrote this year. And I had completely forgotten about this. And when I shared it in 2017, I shared it on Facebook. So it's quite long. It's 4 pages. And I shared it on Facebook. I didn't know where else to share it. Everyone that I knew was on my Facebook, and I made it very public. And the reception that I got then was also just really encouraging, because the shame that I had felt around my relationship with alcohol and drugs was pretty fucking intense. And if you know my story well enough, you will know that I didn't try doing this once, the getting sober thing. I didn't try doing it twice or 3 times or 4 times. It was seven fucking times. 7 times. And you know, I have to repeat myself here, because something that I always add after that is that, you know, I'm not even counting the times that I said I'm never drinking again. The times where I was severely hungover or on a serious come down or experiencing a high that was so deeply uncomfortable that I just wanted to escape my body. I'm not even counting those times. I'm counting 7 times of consciously saying, Africa, you cannot kill yourself in this way anymore. We're going to try something. And then maybe staying sober for a month, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months, I think was the most that I ever did, 5 or 6 months. But I was sober in terms of strategy, but on an identity level, all I wanted was a fucking drink or a line or just something that would help me escape myself. So to be able to share this on Facebook and to be able to share it knowing that there are people on the other side reading it, people that know me that will think, yeah, but you've tried doing this before. What's different? Well, what's going to be different this time? I bypassed all of that and I just fucking shared the thing. And that was the beginning of so much, so much. And I had completely forgotten that I'd written it, because that Facebook account doesn't even exist anymore. It doesn't exist anymore. So I think about a year or two ago, I'd thought about this status that I'd written, this open letter, but I had thought that it was just gone. I'd kind of made peace with the fact that, okay, this is gone. I won't be able to get hold of it. It would be nice to know what my words were at that time at 24 years old. It would be nice to read it back. And it was a really powerful letter, but I mean, I don't have that Facebook account anymore, so I've probably lost it. I don't have the blog that I reshared it on at the time, so it's probably gone. I'd made peace with that. I didn't even think I would need it, right? Because why would I need it? And so when I was decluttering a few weeks ago, and then I find this letter again looking freshly printed, I was just, yeah, the chills that I had reading it, and I'm going to read it to you. It's a little bit long, but I mean, you're just hanging out with me right now. What are you doing anyway? Are you cleaning? Are you driving? Are you going for a walk? What are you up to? So you can just hang with me and I will read you this letter, but it was so fucking powerful because the energy that I could feel from my words then, and then when I read the open letter that I wrote in January of this year, why I'm leaving the cult of wokeness, the parallels are just mind-blowing. Honestly, I can't explain it. I see the conviction in both of those versions of myself, the refusal to live in shame, the refusal to silence myself and to censor myself anymore, and just knowing that there is a better way to do things, that I'm willing to make myself uncomfortable so that I can free myself. I saw that in both of those letters, and it's the most powerful experience to be able to see actual tangible evidence of your past self and your most recent self And they are so aligned, even though in many ways, right, 2017 me was in the fucking pits. I mean, you know, and that's just the nature of having such a... what's the word that comes to mind? That's just the nature of experiencing alcoholism, okay? That's just the nature of experiencing yourself in ways that you would have never imagined before. But even then, I was still very determined. I was still very committed. I was still in integrity with myself in ways that I wouldn't have given myself credit for at the time. So to be able to see those two letters side by side and just see those versions of myself just right there in front of me was just, wow. Wow. Mm. Yeah, let me sip some tea to that. Mm. So that's something that's been happening as well, just me sitting with that letter. And of course, it's going to inform the way that I write my book. It's going to inform the things that I choose to talk about, because my sobriety and that journey really is the foundation for all of the work that I do. None of this has been, none of it has been random. None of it has been random at all. It has just expanded in the most organic way. And I'm so grateful that I have actual evidence that can remind me of that, you know, in moments where maybe imposter syndrome tries to seep in moments where I feel like it's luck. I mean, I don't ever feel like that. But if I was to ever start telling myself, you know, the self-talk that, oh, it's luck that I've ended up here. No, it's not. It's not. You know, it's a combination of so many things. And of course, it's also about the people that platformed my story right in the beginning and all the way up to now, the people that have conversations with me, the people that are willing to share my work far and wide, and not just on social media, but in real life, actually telling their friends about me, you know, their family, their partners, their students. You know, it's a collective effort. It's a collective effort for me to have come to the point where I am. But without me being committed to it through and through, none of that could have happened. So I give myself a lot of fucking credit. Thank you, Africa. Thank you. You're welcome. what else has been happening? By the way, this episode is more of a personal one, right? Even when I was sitting down, I don't have any kind of structure. I just have my letter here next to me. I just have my tea here. I have a few bullet points of some things that I wanted to share with you, but it's just a very, very personal self-reflection sort of episode. But the way that it always goes, I'm sure there will be something in here that you're able to take for yourself. And I think one of the most important things, even just from what I've been saying for the past 18 to 20 minutes, is that it's really important to give your past self some kind of credit, no matter how fucking messy your past was. There was something there that you did right so that you could get here. Something. And it could be something really small, but it could also be something quite big, something quite evidently life-changing, right? But we need to give ourselves a little bit more credit. And even as I hear myself speak, there's also something there about accepting that you've changed, accepting that you are a different person, that you are a different person. But there are also values, core values that you've always held, right? I really believe that. I think even when I think of myself and my journey, a core value that I realize now that I've actually always held, whether I realized it or not, is honesty, which can sound like a contradiction because I used to lie quite a lot. I used to lie quite a lot, you know, sometimes small lies, but big lies. Just trying to make myself feel better, just trying to make sense of the world that I lived in, especially when I was drunk. I mean, I have a wild imagination, so I would just lie, just very colorful, pointless lies, right? But at the very core of who I was, I did value honesty, which is why when I would be sober, I would feel deeply uncomfortable with what I had said or what I had done, because I know that I'm crossing my own boundaries by lying in this way because I value honesty, right? So I always like to remind myself and you as well that we are contradictory beings. We won't get it right all the fucking time. We might stand for something on a value level, but our behavior might be in the complete opposite of that. And I think it's not something that we need to be really harsh on ourselves for, but it's just something that we need to observe and then do differently. But I think accepting that you have changed is really, really important, and also accepting that there are core values that you've always honored. Maybe you haven't honored them in one area, but maybe you have honored them in another area, right? So I think that's also very, very important. And okay, I'm gonna read you this letter. I think this one's going to be a short episode, but I'm gonna read you this letter, and I might stumble a little bit, but it's fine. It's fine. Okay. So this was written in January 2017. Lord knows, I never thought one day I would be writing anything like this, let alone sharing it on the internet. I have debated in my mind for the past 3 months as to whether it was necessary to share this with those that know me or might have, at one point or another, met me. Last year, on the 7th of November, I made the conscious decision to become sober, completely and indefinitely. I type this fully aware that I suffer from alcoholism, and it's something I'm no longer ashamed of. My problem in particular is binge drinking, which is the consumption of an excessive amount of alcohol in a short period of time. I have never had a healthy relationship with alcohol or drunk because I liked the taste. I drank to get drunk. Once I really started, it would be damn near impossible to make me stop. The party never stopped for me. Once the lights were up, or once everyone else had stopped, I had no limits. No breaks, no anchor, nothing. The concept of happily having just one drink was unheard of. It's something I never practiced or intended to. Don't get me wrong, I have gone out for one or two drinks many times, but inside that's not what I wanted. What fun is there in babysitting one glass of wine for an entire dinner? Screw that. I just wanted to get hammered so the best version of myself could come out. Or so I thought. I would be thinking about the next glass, three sips into the first, and then carry on drinking because I felt nothing, no buzz. Soon after, it would all catch up with me, and memory loss would set in. And I mainly got on block blackouts, which are stretches of time for which the person has no memory whatsoever, meaning anything could happen and I would never remember it. I considered blacking out an inevitable stage of my drinking, not something to be concerned about. You'd be surprised how many people think this way too. The worst thing I found was when I was in a blackout, you might not even be able to tell, unless you really know me and you see the character switch happen or notice the blankness behind my eyes. I don't slur my words, stumble, dribble, can't string a sentence together. It's the complete opposite. I seem fully alert, I'm confident with my body, I can be charming, witty, funny, whatever. I make grand plans, which are soon forgotten, I seem all there. The only thing is, my inhibitions are extremely low, and the real me won't be around for a while. I became an exaggeration of myself with some bad habits attached. Don't get me wrong. I've had some awesome times while drinking. It didn't end badly every single time. A few of those good times I had with some of you reading this. But the lows stick in my mind like tar, and the lows became regular. Some of the things I have done in my drunken state make me shudder with fear. It's a good thing I can't drive. Sometimes I get a sudden reminder of what I've done in my past. And it's shocking to realize how many things we can stuff in the corners of our minds, only for them to surface and taunt us. Alcohol has never worked for me, but I carried on abusing it, just never ready to let it go. Most of my worst moments and memories, it has always been evolved. From late 2009, my drinking behaviors have only got worse. That's 8 years of fucked up blackouts, 8 years of rarely socializing in a sober state, 8 years of drinking to reach that point of pure carelessness, 8 years of not really knowing who I am, 8 years of a false persona taking over. It took me so long to accept I had a problem, and here is why. Number one, I wasn't homeless or sleeping on a park bench with liquor in a brown bag, so I couldn't possibly be an alcoholic, right? Wrong. Number two, I never craved alcohol, drunk daily or even weekly, only in social situations or at parties. But once you got me going, I often became a very selfish drunk. And you know, I've heard, you're young, stop worrying, everyone gets like that. No, they don't. Not everyone. It would be all about me. I would completely forget who I'd come with and go searching for a non-existent spotlight that I always found in the form of a man or anyone who was wowed by me. And I struggled to let go of this. A plethora of meaningless flings, waking up in mystery locations, non-stop party favors, everything in excess. It was never time to go home. And there was, is, always an after party. No one was going to steal my fun without a fight. Friend, boyfriend, or family, I wasn't hearing it. Simultaneously, I was misreading the true meaning of friendship. And it didn't help that in my immediate circle, we were all doing the same thing. Constantly on the pursuit of fun. I was surrounded by drinking buddies. And the truth is, that's as deep as it ever was. Every time we met up, I or someone would have a bottle or make the beautiful suggestion to get one. What time it was didn't always matter. It didn't have to be a special occasion either. I started believing that fun equals getting wasted. And those beliefs followed me into adulthood up until very recently. I had started to build a reputation for myself, and it really hurt me when I would tell people that I was going to stop drinking, and the common response would be, yeah, right, how long will that last? And things like, so, when you start drinking again? I felt like change was impossible, so I carried on for years. I even ran into an old pal at a party not too long ago, and he introduced me to his friend as the girl who taught him how to drink. First and lasting impressions, huh? Ooh. So many times I got way too drunk, fucked up, apologized, and promised I would change. That never happened. Quite a few people left my life and gave up on me. Some stayed. I tried to control my drinking. Ooh. But as long as I was drinking, nothing got better. I distanced myself from the friendships that were ruined and moved to new ones. But the same patterns creeped in and my life slowly started to decline. I was in and out of pretty good jobs, but never stayed at one for longer than a month. I was on bad terms with my family. I was an internal mess. My self-esteem was at an all-time low. I was incredibly unhappy. I was prioritizing all the wrong things, but at least my social life was thriving. That was my mentality. When I was drinking, my hangovers came with a side of anxiety and a dash of angry friends, partners, family, reluctantly filling me in on what I had done the night before, how I was behaving, what I was saying, or who I disappeared with. I got my fair share of physical evidence in the form of strange men's beds, strings of phone calls I had made, who I offended, who I was caught lying to, who I had texted to come over at God knows what time, my address attached, of course, or theirs, or who I'd made some absurd promise to. Imagine needing other people to piece together your memories for you because you are not capable of recollecting what you did 80% of the time you went out. I've met many people thinking it was the first time. but then found out we had met a few times before. News to me. I know from experience that a lot of my actions are now some people's permanent perception of me. But I'm learning to get over it and move on with my life. The only thing I can do is work on being who I want the world to know I am. I'm tired of self-shaming and getting frustrated with things I have done in my past. I take full responsibility and I will do better. I'm sick of living the way I was. I'm tired of hurting the people I love. I'm tired of destroying honest relationships. I got bored of my flaky behavior and I had to face the facts. Something had to change. I've had many suggestions that maybe I try to cut down, but it simply doesn't work for me. I've tried many times, from switching to water between drinks to no more than one drink every hour, among other strategies. But those carefully thought out plans quickly went out the window and I slid back into the same patterns. I don't need suggestions on how to control alcohol. It just doesn't work that way. I simply need to abstain. I never saw my sobriety through because I was scared to lose my fun party girl persona. That is the sad truth. I thought being sober would kill my personality. I had instilled the notion that I could only be comfortable in a party social environment if I was buzzing, some way, somehow. Sitting here, I realize that those amazing moments and awesome times were me. I can still be all those glorious things I exuded. I want to feel the best version of myself without relying on anything to bring that out of me. I want to be free. Whew. I want to have genuine fun. I want to turn up and remember everything about where I am, what I'm doing, and who I've met. Is sobriety hard? Yes. It's a daily struggle. I'm one temptation away from going back to square one, and I cannot let that happen. But what's harder than not drinking is existing and not living. And that was my life. Shiny and full on the outside, but I was hurting to the core. I slightly envy those that can drink and know when to call it a day or a night. I just never could, no matter how hard I tried. Look at it this way. If the way I drank was normal, I never would have attempted sobriety in the first place. Sobriety is hands down the best decision I've ever made, and I'm seeing how much better my life is already. It had to be all or nothing. None of this means I'm now a recluse or a hermit. I intend to still have a good time, just differently. It's crazy how thoughts of sober socializing or living beyond inebriation has caused me so much anxiety. But I'm learning that there's more to life than getting wasted. Dare I say it. When I tried to stop drinking before, I never told people the real reason behind me stopping. I would say I'm just taking a little break, or kind of seem like I just didn't like alcohol that much. Seemed like I was in control of my choices, but that was not true. There just didn't seem a right time to say, oh, it's because I think I might be an alcoholic. I knew I was in trouble. It was destroying my life. I will no longer treat myself like a leper because of my alcoholism. And I know a lot of people feel the same way, especially our generation. Society makes us feel embarrassed to admit that we have a problem. Some people choose not to support people going sober because I guess it makes them look at their own habits and they don't like it. But this is not to judge anyone's choices. I'm exactly the same as you. Just trying to figure this life thing out. I'm publicly voicing this because these issues riddle more of us than we care to admit. I write this for those who might suspect they have a problem or are thinking of moderating their alcohol intake. Do some research, talk to someone, decide if certain things are making you feel better, and please realize alcohol does not make you better. or decide if it's making you worse. You are not alone. I also write this so that I can hold myself accountable and not feel the need to hide that I'm going through something quite scary and challenging. There is no shame in needing help. Reach out. It can happen to anyone. Disease doesn't have a face. Africa. Oh my goodness. I have to pour myself a cup of tea. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if I have anything else to add. Coming across this letter, a letter that I thought was completely gone, something that I had made peace with, something that I didn't even think I would need. Coming across this has really reminded me that I'm not here by accident, and I will never allow my own mind or anyone else to make me believe that I have got to where I am by accident. And this is why I will continue to do the work that I do and to continue having the conversations that I have with you, because we are in a time, especially right now, where it's becoming way too tempting to believe that people are incapable of change, even though we have all of the evidence from our own lives. And your evidence does not have to be tangible. It doesn't have to be a letter. It doesn't have to be a fucking recording. You have lived it. You have lived it. So if you can change, why can we not extend the same grace to other people? Why is moral superiority the goal? Moral perfection, something that will never exist. And this is leaving us in a state of moral confusion. And again, when I read that letter, the one that I just read to you now, and thank you so much for listening to it, because it's not a short one. So imagine how long that fucking Facebook status was. Anyway, when I read that letter, I'm reminded that I did have those core values. I did have those core values of integrity. And that offers me some relief. It really does. I did have those core values of honesty, even though I contradicted myself in so many ways, especially when I was drinking, especially when I thought I needed to lead with this version of myself that would be more seductive to the world, but harmful to me. You know, I'm reminded that my freedom has always been a huge value for me. So writing this letter was a way for me to express my values, to truly hold myself accountable. Because that's the way accountability works. The individual or the entity has to hold themselves accountable. And that comes with taking responsibility. You don't force someone to take responsibility. Because for it to be truly taken, they need to accept the part that they play. And I see that in my letter here. And I see that in the letter that I wrote 5 years on, why I'm leaving the cult of wokeness. I had to free myself to say, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to dehumanize people. I'm not going to judge someone based on left and right. I'm not going to parrot things that I don't believe in. I'm not going to follow a crowd that is clearly mad. I'm willing to be in the minority so that I can stand in my values. I'm willing to be uncomfortable so that I can say what is true. And I'm willing to be challenged. I'm willing to be corrected. I'm willing to humanize myself so that I can humanize other people. Because when I don't, when I go against that, it makes me mentally sick, spiritually sick, and then physically sick. Just like in these letters, me thinking alcohol was going to help me run away from all of these things. But no, it just made me very fucking sick until I took responsibility and accountability and openly expressed what was really fucking happening. To say, I'm not going to sabotage myself anymore. I'm not going to censor myself anymore. And this is what I hope it can look like, because this is what it has looked like. So to be able to see my own story in that way and to see this organic transition and to see the work that I do now and the fact that I'm able to support people in this way and just the fact that in this fucking podcast, I can have these conversations with you and it can be enough for someone somewhere to hear it, and it's exactly what they need to hear so they can make a decision that can positively impact them. That just, it's really humbling. It's really humbling and it's very affirming. So thank you so, so much. Thank you. So yeah, this was more of a very, just sharing my mind, gratitude for my sobriety, which ultimately is about emotional sobriety. So thank you for hanging out with me today and diving into this aspect of my identity with me. And yeah, if you have any thoughts or anything you want to share, as always, please send me a DM. You're more than welcome to send me a voice note, even if I can't respond. I do see them. I do listen when I'm on the go. And it always just means so much. Always, always, always just means the absolute world to me. And if you have any suggestions of things you want me to explore in this episode, I'm trying to think of ways that I can make it a bit more interactive for the future, maybe exploring different questions and episodes. You just tell me. You're the one listening as well. So I want you to, I want you to share your mind and put any suggestions you have forward, and also just share anything that comes up for you, really, anything that you identify with, anything that challenges you a little bit. So if you are on Instagram, which is my only social media at this point in time, you can find me at Africa Brook with an E at the end. Just drop me a normal message, text message, or a DM. Or you can also send an email to hello@africabrook.com and you can put Beyond the Self in the subject headline so that it pops out. But thank you so much, as always, for your time and for your attention. If you are not subscribed or following, please make sure you do. And if you could leave a review on Apple, that would be fan-fucking-tastic. I always love reading through them. And I know that, you know, people taking their time to write something like that, it actually means something. It actually means something. So thank you so, so much. This letter has really put me in it's quite bittersweet, but more sweet than anything. Wow. Anyway, thank you so much once again. And thank you to past me for hanging on in there. We did it. We did it, my love. We did it. Anyway, you have a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, whenever you're listening to this, and I will see you in the next episode.